Here with Alejandro Alonso Lopez. Either would maybe joining us, may not, depending on what's going on in their life right now. It's a bit hectic. We're here to discuss Formula 2, Formula 3, Road to Indy, and there's also, I think, half a dozen Formula 4 series on this weekend, but we'll get to those in a moment, as well as some off-track news, which you might have heard a little bit about. So I don't think it made too many headlines, to be honest. So it'll be something interesting to discuss. But so we'll start with Formula 2. Just jump right in there. It was a win for Marcus Armstrong, a win for Felipe Drugovich, and a disaster of a weekend for both Teo Pulcher and Logan Sargeant. I was the one covering that week, those two races. It was a very, very quiet sprint race as far as Formula 2 races go. There was Marcus Armstrong just came and took the race lead off the start and then was off in the distance. It looked like there might be some upset later on when Tatiana Calderon brought out the safety car, and that was a one-lap dash to the flag, but there was no stopping
Armstrong.
I thought maybe it's going to be another quiet Formula 2 race for the feature race. It was not. I think at the end of lap one, the safety car was brought out when Sargeant ended up in the wall, which then brought out a red flag. Then later on, Marino Sato's tyre wasn't fitted properly, which prompted a safety car. And then the old saying, safety cars breed safety cars, with a mega restart crash involving, amongst others, Jack Doohan, who was having a really good race, could have challenged Djokovic for the victory in the end, but as it was, Djokovic took the win. And I feel like we've been saying for the past month that Djokovic has one hand on the trophy, but he could win it. The title in Monza. It's mathematically possible. Maybe not likely, but just a disaster of a weekend for Pulcher and Sargeant's made it that much more difficult for them to take the win. Alejandro, how much of that mess did you get to watch?
Yeah, well, you described what happened quite precisely, to be honest. I mean, it was quite a disappointing weekend for ART Grand Prix Teo Pulcher, and then also for Carlin's Logan Sargeant, and for Virtuosi Racing's Jack Doohan as well. I expected a great battle between both Felipe and Jack, especially in the feature race, because we had one already in Spa, and with positions reverted, I expected them to battle, especially as Felipe has said throughout the season that he feels more comfortable with the soft tires in the MP Motorsport car, and then as they switch to the hard tires, I expect them to battle for the win, and it was quite disappointing for us, I think, to see Doohan crashing out of the race because of Richard Berger hitting him from the rear. So it was a shame, and actually, as you said, there is a high chance that now Felipe takes the title as soon as the sprint race happens in Monza. I think he has a great chance to wrap it up there, and I'm sure he will do it if it doesn't happen in the sprint race in Monza. I'm pretty sure it will happen in the feature race, because you know Felipe has been faultless this year, and I can't see any reason, perhaps mechanical failures, but you know Teo needs to outscore Felipe by a huge amount of points to stay alive in the championship battle. It is true that Monza has historically been a track that has suited our ART, especially with those hard tires, but I don't know, I think it's pretty much all done for Felipe. He just needs to seal it, and I'm sure he will do.
It definitely seems like more a case of when he's going to seal the title rather than if. But it would it I feel like it kind of needs Djokovic to not show up at Monza for him to not win this title. It is aside from obviously the crash will probably be the defining moment of the weekend for Duan. He's really over the past couple of rounds has really kind of come into his own. I feel like there was kind of high expectations at the start of the year, and but it he was the rookie, kind of grew into the championship, and he's definitely now, if he stays in Formula 2 next year, he's one to watch next year for sure.
Yeah, he will be one to watch next year. I had hopes, to be honest, that he could be the one signed by Alpine for the second seat in the Formula One team, considering how well he was doing in recent rounds. I expected him to have a very strong performance this weekend as well. He had, of course, with great pace in qualifying. I think he was second in qualifying. Then he was challenging for the win in the feature race, but unfortunately he crashed out because of this incident at the safety car restart. You could say that it was his fault. He went on quite early and then slowed down again, and Richard couldn't avoid him. But it's a very complicated situation, to be honest. I'm going to go around here a bit, Abby, and I'll say that I don't really like the fact that drivers can not push until the start finish line. I liked it when the safety car line marked the point where drivers could overtake each other, because I think it caused less trouble in a sense, because everyone was pushing already before the last corner or going into the last corner. So we didn't have those sort of situations where they are all in the straight, not wanting to lose a tenth or two, because that could be determinant in order to gain or lose a position. So I think this should be changed. Of course, they are professionals and they should be able to deal with this. But when you are there where distances are so tiny and there is so little margin, I think that it would be good to try and avoid these kind of situations, which I think bring very little but can end up in a great disaster like the we saw this weekend with Jack Doohan and other drivers crashing out of the race.
Yeah, it wasn't just Doohan. I think it was Clement Novalak as well, and Tatiana Calderon were both also caught out in that incident, which really ruined their races as well. So it's definitely something I feel like it's been discussed before, and every time there's a late safety, there's this late restart, something happens, and we end up having this conversation again, and then just nothing seems to change. But one of these days, it seems like it's going to be something even bigger, and it will start taking it seriously. But until then, there's just going to keep having these late crashes. That wasn't the only crash behind the safety car, though. There was also in race earlier in that race, with after the first safety car, David Beckmann and Roy Nissany seemed to be arguing about who was ahead when the safety car came out. Didn't actually take into account the fact that the teams could just tell them who was ahead. It's not as if it was going to be needed to be resolved between the two of them, and then they accidentally made contact, which earned both of them points on their license, and Nissany's finally got that race banned, which I feel like was another thing that we were it was more of a case of when it was going to happen than if it was going to happen. So it's really this is something that is there's something you should expect from kids in karts in their first year, not Formula 2 drivers. You had your head in your hands just then. Any words to share on that? On that?
No comments, to be fair. I mean, it's so embarrassing to see two drivers at this level crashing into each other behind the safety car on a straight. Because, you know, I kind of perhaps understand if you are kind of hitting up tires and in a corner or something, and one goes into the inside and perhaps they touch. But the way they did on a straight, and because of not knowing who was ahead and being in that dispute, unbelievable. I mean, I don't know what to say. I was so surprised to see that, and so well, I think it was an embarrassing moment, to be fair. There is not much I'm going to say about that, because there is not much to be said. I mean, they were both handed a penalty because they both deserved it. And of course, well, we all know that Nissani has now over 12 points, I think 13 points in his license, so he'll miss the next round at Monza and will most likely be back for the last round of the championship in Abu Dhabi.
It was just such an unnecessary thing, and you'd think, I can't believe they did that, but it is what it is. Now, looking at the positives of the weekend, Djokovic now has a 69-point lead with 76 points available. So it's like you say, it's probably gonna happen in Monza. One championship that definitely will be decided in Monza one way or another is Formula 3, which you were writing about this weekend. Wins for Kaya Collett and Zane Maloney. But I as someone who didn't watch the Formula 3 races, my big question is, what on earth happened with Arthur Leclerc and Ollie Bearman? Because their championship hopes are mathematically alive, but other than that, not really.
It all started very wrong for them in qualifying with a poorly timed red flag. As usual, you know, when we have a late red flag, and the grid is so long that when there is no time for everyone to go out and settle up, they don't re restart the session. So yeah, the session ended earlier, and that was it for both of them. And I think Arthur was again P20 or something like that, and of course Ollie was, I think he was 13th perhaps. He missed out on Roubaix's grid pole by a couple of positions, which is drama, of course, for a driver there in Formula 3. When you are sitting qualifying 13th or 14th, you are so close to be able to challenge for a sprint race win on the next day, and you don't make it. And it must be so frustrating for drivers when they are in that situation, especially if you are challenging for the championship. He, well, like Ollie, he was second place in the standings coming into the weekend, and of course he left Zandvoort without any points. I mean, it must be so frustrating, and now he's in the back foot going into Monza, so it must be difficult. It's definitely a shame. I think Arthur is, I'm not going to say he's no longer in the fight for the championship, but it's going to be very, very hard, because in that situation where so many drivers are involved, I think that difference between, or the difference of one or 2 points between drivers, which is the case between Ollie Bearman, Zane Maloney, and Arthur Leclerc, which is, I think, Ollie Bearman in 105 points, Zane in 102, and Arthur in 101. I think those 1, 2 points can be determinant, especially if they qualify well. Then those very last points of the sprint race, or even if it's the other way around, although that would be quite more difficult because they will have to make up positions in the future race. So, but yeah, I think that missing out on points both Arthur and Ollie this week can be a disaster for them now coming into the last run. It's completely opposite situation for Victor Martin, who had a miserable weekend last time out at Spa. I mean, he was crushed into by another driver. He also had a very poor qualifying and couldn't score any points, but he kind of recovered this weekend at Sandburg with a solid performance on Sunday, scoring second place feature race. He took the lead actually, and but couldn't hold it. He struggled, but then he fought hard to fend off Franco Colapinto, who scored a podium for Van Avermaet Amersfoort Racing, who was having his maiden home race in FIA Formula 3. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm quite surprised actually that saying is that the things that the way things have played out in the last few rounds with Victor not coming points at Spa, also Ollie struggling here at Sandburg, and Arthur struggling both at the Spa and Sandburg to score points, and same with Jack Crawford, who yes, didn't score any points at Sandburg and at Spa, sorry, and then Sandburg. He missed out on a great result on Sunday for being too eager into the first corner. He went for it all around the outside, locked up his brakes and went wide and a bit off track. So it was a shame for him because he really had the pace. After that, he recovered quite well, actually. I mean, he dropped back to ninth place, I think it was ninth place, and then he was back in sixth at the end of the race. Considering how difficult it is to overtake Sandburg, it's quite, and without having pit stops involved and all that, it's quite an achievement. So it's a shame for him. He's now well over 30 points, 36 points, if I'm not wrong, behind the championship leader Victor Martin. So it's going to be difficult for him, but for sure I think he will give it all as well, also in Monza, to try and clinch the title. But if you ask me for those who really are in the championship fight, I'd say it's Ollie Bearman, Roman Stanjak, Isaac Hadjar, and Victor Martin.
Yeah, it's just not a great weekend for those guys, but like you say, but it seems to be like this championship seems to change so much every round. I think I said maybe last weekend, like Zane Maloney's kind of going to be one to watch in Formula 3 next year, but looking at it now, it seems like if he were to go up to Formula 2 next year, it would not be an early call up for him. It would still be not underselling himself to stick in Formula 3 for another year and try to go for the championship next year. But he's really, I want to say he developed a lot over the course of the year. But just looking back at the early results as well, he had that. There's good results early on as well. So he's. What do you say? Formula 2 next year or Formula 3 for Zane Maloney?
Well, I don't know. I think it's up to him to see what his options are and to choose among those. I think either Formula 3 or Formula 2 will be good for him next year. I mean, he has missed out on some chances to capitalize on his speed this year, especially at the beginning of the year at Imola, where he was leading the race and made a mistake, and the safety car restarted with a slippery track and basically got stuck and stalled in the grass out of the last corner, or one of the two last corners there at Ribazza. So it was a win loss there, which is a shame for him, of course. And he has also had another couple more incidents throughout the year, so he's definitely lost a lot of points in the way to these last rounds. But I think he has proven he has the speed. So considering that, I don't think a Formula 2 move, if the right opportunity arises, is out of the cards. But also, having him returning to Formula 3 won't be a disaster. I think he's still young here, doesn't have crazy amount of experience in this level, so I think he can afford another year in Formula 3. And if he goes and does Formula 2, it will be a rookie year, perhaps in a smaller team without much pressure, learning stuff, and then going for the championship in 2024. That would be the plan for him for sure.
Also, in Formula 3, there's two more things I just wanted to pick up on. The first being a welcome return to the podium for Juan Manuel Correa, Alejandro.
It was a hard-fought podium for Correa, in my opinion. I mean, he didn't have the pace to challenge Colet for the win. He was clearly a step behind Colet in terms of pace, but he could hold off Zarco Sullivan without much problem. So yeah, I think it was a long time coming. You know, he had DNF in Spa. He was starting at the front, and then he had another DNF. I think it was Austria, when he was already running at the front as well. So it was kind of a long time coming. He struggled for pace last year, but I think this year he has been up there. Perhaps he's been missing out a bit in qualifying, but I think race pace, especially when he has been running with all the drivers around, has been able to challenge them and to fight with them for positions. I don't think he's missed race pace at all, perhaps overall a little bit, but in terms of with the other cars fighting for points, he's been pretty much there all the time. So I'm happy to see him definitely back on the podium, see him smiling again. It's those kind of stories you like to see, and of course, well, pretty very well done to him.
And there was final thoughts on Formula 3, the debut of Sebastian Montoya. Yep, it was Sebastian Montoya, made his debut in the championship with two points finishes. Obviously he wasn't going to be fighting at the very front of the order, but it was a good show for Sebastian in his first appearance.
Yes, definitely. I mean, kind of unexpected debut in terms of results and pace shown. I would say I wouldn't have expected him to be so much at the front, but I don't know. There must be something with that 21 Campos Racing car that those coming into deputies for Hunter Jenny, who's still injured, are doing such a great job with Oli, or both Oli, Oli Bogot, and also Sebastian Montoya scoring good results. I mean, we had Oli scoring fourth place at Spa. Now Sebas also kind of benefited from the red flag in qualifying, like Oli did in Spa, but he put the lap together. I mean, when you are there is many people talking. Of course, yeah, he benefited from the red flag. Others have better his time or whatever, but for me, it's a matter of he put the lap when he had to put it, and that for me is very important. I mean, he wasn't at the back of the pack and nowhere without any chance. He was at that point on the pace, and he was able to put a lap that was good enough to be in the top 10 at that moment, and he did so. He's completed definitely a qualifying, also benefited from the red flag, but that's there for everyone, and he pretty much hold on to his starting position in the feature race and dropped a few positions, especially at the start in the sprint race, but nevertheless still 2 point finishes. So great job for him as well.
Moving away from Zandvoort, it was a busy weekend in Portland for the Road to Windy. We had two titles decided in USF 2000. It was a win for Michael D'Orlando. And in Indy Pro 2000, it was a win for Louis Foster. They took the titles. I think Louis Foster's been one that we've kind of expected, but USF 2000 was really it was really quite a close battle at the top of the standings, and even over the course of the weekend between Jace Denmark won the first race of the weekend, so it kind of looked like things were going in his favor, but then it was a not a good race for him or for the other title contender whose name had just escaped me. It wasn't no good. The final race of the weekend, so it wasn't good for him or Miles Rowe, really. Miles Rowe had to come back from a poor opening lap, so it was the door was wide open for Michael D'Orlando, and he went through it. Whereas Louis Foster, we've kind of all along we've expected him to take the title. Louis coming over from the Britain, he did British Formula 4 juniors and a few, and I think GB3. So it's been great for to see him do well in America, and for him saying for him to say the Indy Pro 2000 is kind of an overlooked championship. What did you make of that?
I think he has done a very good job considering the move he's made. He's always been in Europe. He had never won a title before, and I think his adaptation was extremely good. He was quick out of the box. I mean, he scored two podiums already in the opening round at St. Petersburg, if I'm not wrong, and then he kind of started building on his form, and he in the middle of the season he just started winning and giving no chance to others to challenge him for the win, and his championship campaign was pretty much his championship was pretty much won there. I mean, in all those races mid-season that he won, and I thought that this weekend somehow risk goal going starting the weekend with all the test sessions, he seemed so comfortable at the top of the charts, and I generally thought that there might be a chance for risk to somehow trying to delay Foster's win into race two or perhaps race three if he had a great run and Foster his some trouble, but that again going into qualifying, Lewis was unbeatable and he just went out there in race one and dominated. He played very smart into turn one with Reese trying to overtake him, but he could hold onto the lead of the race, and then he just slowly started building up a gap between him and Reese Gold, who was behind him, and then that was it for the title. Of course, Gold was able to win the other two races of the weekend, but that was pretty much after Foster had done all the job in the first race. So yeah, I was kind of disappointed that Gold couldn't challenge Foster a bit more in this last round. But yeah, nothing really to say because Lewis has done an amazing season. He was fast since the beginning of the season, and since halfway through the season, he has been outstanding. He has been brilliant. So yeah, nothing really to say apart from good words.
Final rung on the Road to Windy Land ladder. It's a win for Benjamin Pedersen, a long time calling for Benjamin. arguably should have won it a few rounds ago when he was very dominant in practice, and then qualifying got cancelled, and it was the qualifying ended up based on the championship order, so he didn't get that pole position, which he arguably should have done. But he's finally got that win now in the penultimate round. But it's still Linus Lundqvist is the one to watch there. Also going on this weekend, we had your Formula Open, and I think Ida has some news for us on that, which wasn't the most glorious weekend for your Formula Open, let's put it that way. Off track, I believe it was just as Felipe Drugovich was taking the pole position in Formula 2, his predecessor, Oscar Piastri, was confirmed to be at McLaren for the 2023 Formula 1 season. It was something that we kind of all sort of expected. Then Alpine made their very weird announcement that he was going to be there, but great news for to see another Formula 2 graduate in Formula 1. I think Craig said a few about this time last year that Oscar was one of the most Formula 1 ready drivers he's ever seen, and I think I can back that up. He's definitely a very strong driver. Alejandro, what did you make of first Piastri's call up to McLaren, and then we'll get into the disaster that was how he got to McLaren. I feel like we talked a lot about it a little bit before. We may have or may not have done a whole podcast on it, but we can talk about it a little bit more now.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think he's 1 year late to joining the F1 grid. I think this sort of sideline gap years shouldn't happen for, especially for champions, for series champions. I mean, it's a shame he didn't have continuity from Formula 2 to Formula 1, because in a week, in a year out, many things can happen. Fortunately, he's having a seat in 2023, which is awesome. Also with McLaren, which is great team, great heritage, and also now he's showing strong pace and a great organization with Zak and Andreas Seidl doing a great job on the management side, and then the team at the factory is doing a great job to put a good car together. Which is good. I think my only concerns are that he's going against Lando Norris, who is pretty much well established within the team. So I hope that doesn't place out against Oscar. But I think Oscar has proved throughout his career that he works really hard. He's known to keep very low key profile and not really putting very high expectations, and his management, everyone around him has been able to downplay expectations to let him learn and also work and focus on the racing. So despite all that's been going on, which is definitely going to put a lot of pressure on him, because you had two Formula One teams fighting for your services even before you've made your debut in Formula One, which is obviously something big and I've never seen before, because we've had other situations like that, like the one in the past. But drivers involved had already made their Formula One debut, so it's kind of a weird or new at least situation. So we'll see how much that affects Oscar, but I'm sure anyway he'll be able to concentrate and deliver at least better than Ricciardo is doing now, which is not difficult. I feel sorry for Daniel, of course, but the situation had to end, and it was brought to an end rightly by McLaren, and I'm glad Oscar is taking the seat. He's going to be a tough teammate to go against, but I'm sure he can do a great job, and quite interested in seeing what's going to happen there.
And the other side of this is, I think, the third Renault slash Alpine Junior that Alpine has kind of lost. There was show at the start of 2020 or 20, yeah, at the start of 2020, I'm forgetting my years now. At the start of 2020, everyone here was like, Zhou is going to be the champion, and we all had really high expectations for Zhou. Obviously, those didn't play out, but it was, I think, 2 weekends into the Formula 2 Championship, Alpine announced, or Renault as it was, announced Alonso was coming back. So that was door closed for Zhou, and then Zhou ended up at Alfa Romeo. Then we've got Christian Lundgaard, who's now at now doing really well in IndyCar. He's fighting at the front of the order there. Now they've lost Oscar Piastri. Do you think we're going to see Jack Doohan in an Alpine car in the next 5 years? I feel like 5 years is a good time frame with Alpine as they are, because Esteban Ocon's got a contract for 2 or 3 years. So what expectations can Jack Doohan have?
No, I mean, I'd like to first of all, I'd like to add to that list you've made of drivers lost by Alpine, or at least that they've let go. Jack Aitken, who moved from back at the time the Renault Academy to Williams Academy, because he felt that there was no chance for him at Renault back in the day, and he felt that there were more opportunities for him to complete F3 practice sessions and other Formula One duties in Williams. So it's another one that they've lost. Going back to your question, I don't know. Esteban Ocon's contract ends by the end of 2024, I think. So it's 2 more years, and I'm quite interested to see for how long they are signing the second driver they are going to have on board. Reports say right now that might be Pierre Gasly, and I think that if they are bringing Pierre Gasly from AlphaTauri, buying him out of his contract, I think he'll be signed for more than 1 year. Which is obviously not ideal, especially for one driver we've already mentioned in this podcast, Jack Doohan, who has been doing a great job this season despite some inconsistency. And perhaps most likely he will be ready to step up to Formula One by the end of next year, if he's not by the end of this year already. Because apart from all those mistakes he has made on track, I've seen Jack wear closely this year in the paddock. In the times I've been in the paddock, he's so professional. So I really doubt perhaps the adaptation to the Formula One car, which is something very very different to everything else. But the adaptation to apart from that, I think he's very professional, and he could perfectly deal with being in Formula One already next year. So I don't think that would be a big problem for Jack at all. But yeah, I'm quite concerned that we could see no one champion in the Alpine F1 car from the academy in the next few years, as you mentioned. And it would be a shame, you know, because you have the academy, you have these drivers running your livery, and then putting them into the car should bring, I mean, a message of team and taking care of what's yours, also promoting your brand, showing that you are picking the right people, that your academy is useful. So perhaps you've got more drivers interested in joining. There's lots of things, and if we at the end don't have any because they are buying Pierre Gasly out of his contract, it's going to or Pierre Gasly or whoever else sits in the market. I mean, Daniel Ricciardo or Mick Schumacher. It's going to be a shame.
You say Pierre Gasly, he seems to be the favourite at the moment, but the only way Pierre Gasly is getting out of his AlphaTauri contract is if AlphaTauri can have Colton Herta, which is a whole other can of worms, because Colton Herta does not have a super license, does not have enough super license points. Now, I feel like there's a lot of talk online about, oh, Red Bull will get their way because Red Bull's always gets their way with the FIA. Like, putting aside all the FIA conspiracies aside, Haas was the last team to have the super license point system rule broken for them because they had Pietro Fittipaldi, who did not have the super license points, which was why I was so adamant that he was not going to have the F1 seat. But they changed the FIA gave him a super license because if you how the super license works is that you have to have the 40 points over the past 3 years, but Fittipaldi broke both his legs in an accident that wasn't his fault. So they allowed him to collect those points over the past 4 years. So he was granted a super license. And you can argue that he was a reserve driver, but a super license is a super license at the end of the day. So those points have that rule has already been broken. It's very different circumstances with Colton Herta because he hasn't broken any of his legs. And it's more the fact that Colton hasn't gone through the FIA approved route to get to Formula One. But when you look back at what Louis Foster says, with the Indy Pro 2000 being overlooked, it's the FIA's kind of underestimated, in my opinion, Road to Indy, IndyCar, and other championships like your Formula Open. When you've got championships like Formula Regional Japan, which have, I think they've got a few drivers that have been racing for decades, racing in Formula Regional Japan. When that's as valuable that as some in Road to Indy championships, you've got to ask, like, is the super license point system up to scratch? And I could go on about this for approximately 3 years, but I feel like no matter how many points he has, Colton Herta has proven that he's more than capable of being in a Formula One car. And it will be a shame if he doesn't get the opportunity just because he hasn't gone through the FIA approved ladder. Alejandro, do you think he's going to get that seat? I don't know how much Indy you watch, but he's a IndyCar race winner. Though he hasn't won the title, he's definitely one of the exciting prospects in IndyCar right now. So, do you think he's going to be in F1?
I don't know if he's going to be in F1, but I hope it is not because he's granted an exemption for the sub-license. I mean, because that would be very, very odd, in my opinion. It's like, yeah, of course, we know the things are done wrong, but we are giving you an exemption so you can race, and we keep doing things wrong. I would be okay with him coming into Formula One, and obviously as soon as next year, if they said, okay, we've been doing everything wrong up until now, and we need to readdress the way we give points to the series, and we sort that out, and we are changing it with immediate effect, and we are giving this year many more points for IndyCar and all that. And if they do that, I'll be very happy to have Colton in Formula One. If it's an exemption, I'm not so sure because the issue will still be there. So for me, it makes no sense having him on the basis of having an exemption because he's been so good, which he has obviously been so good. But there are many other drivers that because they haven't been able to get a very good car or something, they have never been able to get close to that situation of having an F1 contract, even if they are a reserve driver, even as a reserve driver. So, it's kind of, yeah, I would like to see Colton because, as you said, he's proven his winning credentials in IndyCar, although he's quite prone to errors, I would say. I mean, he's been making mistakes quite often, especially in the last 2 seasons, and that's something I don't quite like it. It's like he's not learning from his mistakes on track, which is something that he should look at and try to learn from, because it's a shame. He could be way further up the order, in my opinion, if he has sorry that couple of mistakes he's made this year. So yeah, but otherwise, apart from that, he's a great driver, so fast, and I'm sure that if he makes the jump and he can adapt. I'm not going to say that because coming from the States will be adapting better or worse than other drivers, because at the end of the day, Formula One is so different to everything else that, you know, it's very difficult. We've had many drivers, very successful drivers in the FIA ladder to Formula One. I'm going to call it like that, GP3 series and FIA Formula 3, Formula 2. We have had some drivers that have had great results in those categories, and they haven't really performed in Formula One. Then we had others that perhaps have never had those great results, and they are now performing great in the midfield or in a car at the back of the grid. Like it's the case of Alex Albon now, who's of course being a very fast driver in feeder series, but he never won a title in FIA 3, GP3 back at the time, and also Formula 2, and now he's excelling in Williams. So yeah, I'm sure if he doesn't deliver, it won't be because he's coming from IndyCar. It will be because of adaptation or something like that. But the point he's coming from IndyCar, I don't think it's going to matter at all. It's more about adaptation, and as I said, I'd like to see him in Formula One, see how, as we see Formula Two drivers going to IndyCar and Formula One drivers going to IndyCar, and see how developed they are and how they cope there. I'd like to see IndyCar drivers coming into Formula One and see how they can evolve and how fast can they can be. But I am definitely against it being because of an special exemption for Colton.
Yeah, that makes sense. If it's an exemption that, like you say, the problem's still there. But with Formula One having, I think, three American races next year, it would be good for them to have an American, both one an American on track, but two, an American who's already known in America, if that makes sense. Like we've got Logan Sargeant, who, if F1 really, really wanted an American from their feeder series, they could have Logan Sargeant. But to have someone that America knows would just be brilliant for Formula One, and it would just be great to see things going the other way. We've had quite a lot of European drivers going over to America, so it'd be nice for American drivers to be welcomed into F1 in the same way that our FIA drivers have been welcomed into IndyCar. I believe that's everything we've got for today, although Ida's probably remembering about 15 things that they need to put in. This weekend we've got coming up Formula 3 and Formula 2, Formula 3 season finale, so that will be one to watch, and you'll get all the reaction and news at Formula Scout as always. We've also got Formula Regional European Championship in Red Bull Ring, with Italian Formula 4 there, and the Indy Lights season finale at Laguna Seca. I apologise for any pronunciations. We also have GB3 at Brands Hatch and Formula 4 at and French Formula 4 at Lidenon, I apologise again, and ACR Formula 4, GB4, formerly regional Japanese championship, formerly Italia and Danish Formula Four. I think that's everything. So you can watch all of those, get all the news and race reports from the Scout, and we'll have next week reaction from Formula 3, Formula 2, and likely Indy Lights. And I hope to see you, well, talk to you next time.